You are listening to the Smuggler's Galaxy podcast, my favorite podcast to listen to on long flights across the galaxy.
This is the way.
We want it been.
Welcome to episode 155 of the Smuggler's Galaxy podcast, your favorite Star Wars podcast for smugglers in the galaxy. I'm Glenn, and with me, as always, is Jason, except for last week when he was at PowerCon.
Last week was the oddity, but it's good to be back, and it's been 2 weeks since I recorded, so I'm sorry if it seems like I'm a little rusty.
I mean, it does feel like it's been a minute.
Yeah. It's just been 14 days. It's not long at all.
Oh, geez. So how was your couple of weeks?
Good. Busy, as always. This summer has been like one of the busiest summers of my life with all the travel and work. And it's been crazy. And it's not over yet.
No, you got another thing coming up soon. So
looking forward to September. But even then, I might have to go back to Dallas in September. So it's like, ugh.
Geez. So you're doing Dallas for work?
Yeah, for work. Everyone was suggesting Order 66 toys and then Holocron.
Yeah, Jedi. Is it Holocron toys or just Jedi Holocron? I don't know.
Something like that. So if I go back, I'm going to get a car because I think I'll be there for a couple days instead of one. And I was just Ubering around.
Gotcha. There's a lot of good toy stores in Dallas, dude. Plus you get some barbecue.
Oh my gosh, I had so much barbecue. It was insane. Like everywhere it was barbecue and it was just delicious. The first one I went to, I got a brisket sandwich, but the brisket it was delicious. It came with coleslaw on the sandwich and some barbecue sauce. It was on like a sub roll almost. Mm-hmm. And it was delicious, but halfway through I'm like, I don't want the bread. So I started eating the brisket alone and it was so smoky that it tasted like I was eating smoke.
Oh, geez.
And then we went into this place called Cowboy Chicken, which was kind of like a Panera, except that they had a pit where they were just rotisserie chicken. Uh-huh. It was so good. The chicken sandwich was so good. Like, that's the place to go. JD's is awesome here in Georgia, but that's a place to go if you love barbecue.
If you've got the time, you need to go to Lockhart if you love barbecue and have some barbecue. I think it's like an hour, maybe an hour and a half from Dallas, maybe more. You'd have to look at it.
My wife wants, if she comes with me in September, she wants to go to Waco to go to Magnolia thing. And she's like, I hate them, but I want to go. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
It's such a tourist trap, but hey, get a cupcake. My wife used to watch that show and I'd be like, when are they bringing the cupcakes? And whoop. There you go. Cupcake time. Cupcake time. So pissed at me.
How was Legion Con yesterday?
Dude, I love Legion Con. I heard a lot of people kind of, I think we had a multitude of, we had conventions too fast because we had, I think, one every weekend this month.
Yeah.
And it felt that way with Legion Con because when I talked to Jordan, y'all go to everything and both of y'all were just like, I'm taking a week off. Yeah, and I'm like, dude, it's Legion Con, man. You got to come support Hamer.
Powder Springs Toy Show, followed by Jolanta, followed by Legion Con. It was boom.
Yeah, Power Con. So you had a lot of people that made the trip up to Columbus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I heard that affected Toylana or Jolanta. Because a lot of people made the trip to Columbus versus Jolanta.
Yeah, because Toy Department comes down to Toylanta, but they were at a PowerCon.
Right.
For example.
Well, they are big enough. I think they have a couple of different setups that they could have done both shows if they wanted to. But you don't know what their reasoning behind it is. And I've heard Toylana or Joelana rather suffered because of it being on the same weekend as PowerCon, but I don't, that's not my bag, man. I didn't go to Joelana because I didn't want to pay the $15 to get in. I knew how small of a show it was, and it was a lot of money for me to pay, I think $15 to get in there. Mm-hmm. for a very small show, where versus Legion Con, it's $5 and you can spend all day there. It's a lot easier. It's more of a hangout.
There's a bar,
and I mean, he's got it set up pretty cool, because he's got it's at the Legion in Smyrna, Georgia. So when you get there, there's a bar, and then in the bar he had like artist painting and stuff. And then you can, you get a beer or you get a burger and you hang out and you can look at the artist. And then in the main room, he has a comic book artist and then toys. And I mean, for it being a smaller show, I enjoy it. Cause like I said, man, you just hang out. We got there at like 9 and we left at 5 and we're like, where'd the day go? Because it's just, we hang out, we said we have a club table there, so we kind of are in the front, and there's a couple of people from the Legion that are there taking tickets. So we shoot the crap all day long with them, and it makes for a fun show. It makes for a fun show to see people. And the 501st were there. They had a dad with his two sons. The dad did a pretty damn awesome Count Dooku, where Matt from Nerd U was just like, did you see that Count Dooku? Because I saw him walk through the door and I was like, oh my God. And then he's like, when he got closer, you could tell he wasn't really Count Dooku, but 20 feet away, 10 feet away, you see somebody dressed as Count Dooku and you go, oh crap, it's a damn good Count Dooku.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and they had a guy, one of the sons was a TK and the other son was a TIE pilot.
Were they like 7, 8 year olds? Or are we talking like 20-year-olds?
Probably 20-year-olds.
Okay. So they were tall enough to be stormtroopers.
Yeah, they were official 501st members. Okay. They were probably, if they were, late 20s, late teens, early 20s. And then they had a Darth Raven and a Tick. Tick was there.
Tick.
They had a Tick. Tick. So every time somebody was like, hey, Tick, I'm like, no, you're pronouncing it wrong. It's Tick. Tick.
Hey, Tick. 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 Hey.
Which I was kind of surprised to see a Tick, but I mean, the guy had a great costume.
Yeah, that's a great, I saw the photos. That's a great Revan, and it's a great Teak. It was awesome.
So,
and that was a great Glenn. Who was in the middle? That was
Glenn. Yes, that was me in the middle.
Had your Hawaiian shirt on and everything.
Yeah, my wife picked that up for me. She got it off Amazon, and everybody's like, oh, it's a Hawaiian shirt. And they're like, oh no, it's got Fed on it.
Yeah, I got to look into trying to make some sort of custom Hawaiian shirt. It's just with everything else going on. But I want it to be a legit Hawaiian shirt. Anyways, that's
a squirrel to the pile of crap
for this episode. Anyways.
But yeah, go ahead.
Pick anything up from the show?
I did. I picked up, there's a guy named Dan Curran. I know I pronounced his last name wrong, but he does art. And he did a Fett piece, and he did a Wicket piece. I knew about the Fett piece because he had posted it, and I was like, sweet, I'm going to have to pick that up. And then when we walked to his table, he had a Wicket piece, and I was just like, damn it, I'm going to have to buy that too. So it's a couple of pieces of original, like 4x6 art, which I love because I don't have enough, 4x6 really small pieces of art are perfect because I don't have a whole lot of room. And then what else did I pick? I picked up a Micro Galaxy Squadron, is it Antok Merritt?
Yep.
X-Wing?
Yep.
And sure. I was looking at it because the one I got, you didn't have a sticker on it.
Yeah.
This one didn't have a sticker on it either.
So did the seller know what they had?
It was Steve, our buddy Steve had it.
Yeah.
And he had bought the guy out that was next to him. I guess the guy wanted to leave and he made an offer on the whole booth because he had a smallish booth. And I was looking at it, and I was just kind of looking at it, and he goes, dude, you can have that for like $5 because I have no money. I've got what I wanted out of this booth. And, and I kind of put it down because I'm like, yeah, you're running through your head the amount of money you spent during the day. And you're like, $5 is cheap, but I don't really want to, you got to stop somewhere. And then I just picked it up and I opened it up because the box, the bubble was crushed. It was an opener anyway. It wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't worth holding on to, but yeah, so that was it. And no, and then I picked up an X-Men number 4 because it had Gambit on the cover. So I'm trying to do a Gambit run, or just when I'm, you know, if I can find cheap comics with Gambit on it, I'll pick those up just to have something to look for while you're, you know, going through stuff. Look, you know, mm-hmm. so you have something to look for while you're at a show.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. And then my wife picked up a little purse. Somebody had taken, was taking purses that they found at like Goodwill and painting stuff on them. And of course, can you guess what character it had on it?
Wicket.
Wicket. It had Wicket. And the lady was only wanting like $20. I'm like, the drawing's worth $20. So that's it that I picked up there.
What else did you pick up?
I picked up, you know, the Target, the two Target Fets.
Yes.
I found those in a Target, so I picked okay. those up too. And yet again, it's one of those, do I really need these? And I'm like, it's Fet. You just got to keep it going. You just got to feed the machine and be like, damn it, I'm feeding the machine. And they are continuing to repaint Fet because people like me keep buying them.
You don't have to. You want to.
I wanted to.
You've got a demon on your shoulder saying, do it.
I do. And then all of a sudden I look over and there's Wayne going, hey, man, how you doing?
Was Wayne there?
No.
No, no. That's a callback to a previous episode. Okay, I'm on board. I'm on board. I have to give myself credit. That was faster to catch up than normal. You have to explain it.
It's funny because there was one thing. What was it? Because you keep going the callback because like you were in PowerCon. And you had made something and Wayne's like, Wayne is going back for it. And then like, there was another post that I had, Wayne yeah. was saying something and then I posted do it. Oh no, he was doing his, like the last minute of the fundraiser, the Kickstarter. And I had posted a do it. And then he posted a Simpsons underneath it, Simpsons gift.
Nice.
So it's good to know that it just keeps going.
It keeps going.
It does.
Jokes never die.
No, they don't. They just keep going and going and going.
Yeah. Yeah, congratulations to Wayne because his book completely funded and it hit the $50,000 tier. So he's going to get an interview with Tim Effler into the book.
Yeah, it was like $2,000 away from the $60,000. They're like $58,000. I was really happy for him.
Yeah. So he's hard at work at volume 2.
Awesome.
So that'll be something to. And the weird thing is at PowerCon, he didn't bring a lot of G.I. Joe prints because why?
Yeah.
It's a Power Masters of the Universe convention, but he sold out. That was the first thing that sold out was all the G.I. Joe prints.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a good time, PowerCon. We the Blue Milk booth was kind of, there was the, across the intersection of the walkway was Wayne's booth. So I was bouncing back and forth, helping between the two when I could. And it was a good time. Should I just get into it?
Yeah, dude, just do it. We're do it.
Long story.
You've got some first, fun stories to say from PowerCon, man.
Yeah. The first place we stopped, it was Kim Simmons' studio. We had to pick something up for Tim Effler. So just to be in the studio where all of those photos were taken,
wow.
It was just a bit unreal. And Kim gave me it was part of one of his Kickstarters. Come up. It's a patch made by Josh.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kim Simmons. And so like to get this from Kim Simmons and Kim Simmons' studio where all the photos from Empire On were taken, it was pretty awesome. And then I had some ideas there for dioramas because I'm still working on that Cantina thing. So I might incorporate some of the ideas from that into this. So it was cool. And from there, we went off. That was Cincinnati. We went off to Columbus. There's a whole stretch of highway there from Cincinnati to Columbus where we saw the UFO. It just needs to be said. This time it was in daylight. And we were looking the whole time for like an hour and a half trying to find a way to explain away what we saw. And there was nothing.
So there was no UFO or anything on this trip?
There's no UFO, but there was no... thing where it was like, oh, well, that's obviously what we saw. That's a billboard. All the billboards were out in the cornfields.
Right.
There was really nothing above that was triangular shape. So I just want to put that out there. It was a genuine UFO, a UAP, as they call it these days.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's more like government technology, but that's a whole nother conspiracy theory black hole thing that we're not going to go down in this episode of the Smugglers Galaxy podcast. You want to hear about PowerCon, so let me tell you about that. We get in. I also want to preface this. I had set a budget for myself of $300.
Awesome.
I met a guy last year at PowerCon, Josh, who deals with Earl McCarthy artwork. Mm-hmm. Earl McCarthy is a designer, an illustrator who did a lot of drawings for toys. He did a 70 to 80 different toy lines. He's passed away, and most of that art is with his family, but some of it is out on the market. And so he did a lot of stuff for Masters of the Universe, which is why he's there. And I asked him, do you have any Micro Machines stuff? And he's like, yeah, I think so at home. Here's my card. So I've had his card for a year. And I told Rich that I was going to reach out to him. He's like, oh, I know him. I'll reach out to him. Of course, Rich knows everyone.
Yeah, that is... So, never mind. It's funny because you talk to Rich and you know, the same thing. You're like, dude, I'm thinking about this. Like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
Yes. So he reaches out on my behalf and he says, I got something. I'll bring it to you to the show. So I'm like, okay, great. So I know that there's some artwork coming and I have a $300 budget. And so we arrive at PowerCon 9:30 at night on Thursday. The convention closes at 10. So really, we don't have much time other than to unload, which we do. We saw the Thundercats playset, that $650, I don't know, it was 4 foot tall. Like I took a photo with me next to it because I'm a big guy. And so just for scale, that thing is massive.
Yeah.
I hope Hasbro listens if they decide to do some sort of Kickstarter like that campaign, crowdfund a big playset like that. Like it was only $650, but it was only 3,000 people. They didn't ask for 8,000 people. So just keep it small, Hasbro. But it was a cool playset, like walking around front to back. And then later on, they did put a container, acrylic shield around it so no one can touch it. So on the first day, I was actually like, I could touch it. I was close enough to see that it was 3D printed.
Yeah.
Anyways. So
now, when you say is that like a preview night or is that like a load in night on Thursday?
That's a load in night.
Okay.
There's not really a preview night. It's just that you load in and then Friday it opens.
Gotcha.
So we dropped everything off and we went over to Josh and Rich was talking to Josh about something. And then we decide to, he's like, oh, let me show you the art. So we go over to his booth because he's got a couple booths actually. And he pulls out Dash Rendar, Shadows of the Empire. The sketch that Earl McCarthy made for Micro Machine line. And I'm just looking at this thing like, yes, this has all the things that I love. Shadows of the Empire, Micro Machines, original artwork. Like, I want this. I'm going home. He says he wants $300 for it. I'm like, oh, that's all my money. And I'm like wishy-washy because I don't want to like get rid of all my money night one. He's like, I'm here all weekend. So I'm like, okay, great. So we leave. We get up Friday morning to go set up the booth. PowerCon on Friday opens from 2 to 8. So it's almost
so you
like
had all day.
Yeah, after work, come by, come on down and check it out. So we start setting up the booth and we meet Freddie Thoman, who is the gentleman who sat across from us in the aisle. He's a Kenner employee. He worked on Star Wars, Mask, Strawberry Shortcake, Ghostbusters, he did Batman. He was on Batman for like 10 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's got a pretty impressive resume. We have an interview with him that we'll play at the end here. And I'll go into like what went into leading up to that towards the end. But he pulls out these photos onto his tabletop. They're photos of when Boba Fett visited Kenner. And he scanned the original negatives and then made prints out of it. And I'm sorry, Narayan, I failed you. I didn't pick up a set for me or for him, but he's going to be
for
making,
me, dude.
Or
thanks.
For you, I'm sorry. But he's going to be making more. However, this was images of when Lucasfilm sent the armor to Kenner to have somebody walk around and they could take photos. The weird thing was, Freddie said this was 1979, but all the armor was Return of the Jedi colors. So if you know Boba Fett, you know, like, his gauntlets are blue. The tick marks on the side of his head went from yellow to orange. The jetpack was a different color. It was all Return of the Jedi. And I wanted to be nice. I didn't want to be insulting and be like, no, this can't be right because this is Return of the Jedi. But he was adamant it was 1979. So I don't know if they had some alternative coloring that they were playing with and then decided to use that for Return of the Jedi. I don't know. But he was taking all these close-up photos of all the armor work and the details. He was the only person, my understanding, to take photos when that happened. So he had a complete set there for like $100. So I didn't get a set for any of us, but he will be making more. It was a pretty cool thing because I don't think he said this is the first time he's ever made them available. So to be like one of the first people to see these photos outside of Kenner was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I saw a video of that, and I don't know if it's the same issue, same instance or not. But there's you see a shot of Boba Fett like extending his gauntlet where he's shooting fire, and then just snap a picture, and then that ends up being the card back, and it's Boba Fett on like a white background, like against a wall, and then they airbrushed it and made it the card back. So I don't know if that's the same thing or not.
I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to see the photos again to. Right. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I can. I did take photos of the photos. To show Narayan. No, there's no white background.
Gotcha.
Are you talking about this one?
Similar, yeah.
Who knows? Anyways. So it was great to meet Freddie and listen to him tell these stories. He was pulling out, he did the original, like I said, the original painting for that Ice Planet playset. He was 19 years old. He was an intern. And he painted this playset that we've all, like most people had as a child for wow. Ice Planet Hoth. And he did artwork he did the design for the AT-ST. So he's the one that made the different sketches of that. And then they sent it off to a mechanical designer who kind of molded it. And they went back and forth because like the mechanical designer would come back and was like, the leg's too small here. We need to make it bigger for it to stand. And Freddie would be like, well, that doesn't look like the thing itself. Can we do this? And so there's that back and forth in the development of that product. He said he had to go up to like Grand Rapids because there was a guy with a stylus who would trace the wooden patterns and then put it into the computer so they can make their molds and stuff. So he had to transport the wooden stuff up there to watch like them scan the feet. That was the example that he used. So that was pretty awesome. Tom Osborne was there Friday. Tom was a director of something at Kenner. He worked on all that stuff too. And Freddie, I think, reported to him.
Wow.
And so then they had their panel at 4:00. So I did the introductions for that panel, but I did not moderate it because they had a slideshow. And I was like, I don't want to like interrupt their slideshow to ask questions. I just let them go. So it was cool to be on stage with them, do a quick, this is Freddie, this is Tom, this is what they worked on. That was awesome.
Cool. Were there a lot of people at the panel?
No. Oh, I was quite disappointed with that. That would be my only, like, I loved PowerCon. It was double in size since last year. It's definitely a show worth going to. Prices were great and competitive. But they did have two different halls for the panels.
Uh-huh.
And during the Kenner panel, it was like Super 7. Excuse me. I just had some soda, so I'm burpy. It was either Super 7 or NECA or something like that was doing a panel at the same time. So people would pop into their panel and then quickly look around and realize, oh, wait, this is not. And then they would leave. That happened like two or three times. There's probably about 7 people in the audience, not counting me.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was pretty crushing.
Yeah, because when they did that at Toylana, well, granted, the club was there, so the word got around pretty decent, but the room was full.
Yeah. But they did talk about developing, like, not only Star Wars, but Mask. And Freddie, like I said, he was an illustrator, so he did some artwork for Mask. And as the slides came up, he's like, I don't even remember doing that. He said he was a gun for hire, so sometimes they'd be like, you're not working on anything, so go over there real quick and do a sketch for Mask. And he would come back and work on whatever he was working on.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that's also, I've talked to some of those guys and they're like, dude, it's 40 years ago. I don't remember everything I've done.
Yeah.
And then you talk to other people who are in the industry now and they're like, it was a job to them. They don't, there's no way they're going to remember everything they touched.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it was. That's exactly what they said, what Freddie said. And so then and it was like 4 to 5, that panel, and 5 to 5:30, 6-ish. Got a quick dinner, just quick something to eat. And then I was like, I'm going to go out and record. And Rich is like, all right, go look for Ugnaughts. He wanted some Ugnaughts, legacy collection, Ugnaughts for his personal collection, which I need to go look into that Ugnaught a little bit, because he was talking about some design things that they made with that legacy Ugnaught. Like, you could pull it apart, and the idea was that at some point you'd be able to make the vintage Ugnaught with like a purple vest and a gray suit and stuff like that. I need to go back and take a look at that closer, but they never did that. So anyways, he wanted the legacy collection Ugnaughts. I had put my heart set on buying that piece of art, so I wasn't going to buy anything.
Right.
I just wanted to see what was out there. So I start walking around with the camera, checking out, you know, there's two vinyl Cape Jawas there. The dude that I bought the Imperial Officer last year for $100 had this thing for $7,000, which is a steal considering like the price of that stuff now.
Well, considering there was another guy selling one for like 20 or something, that like twice the price.
The Lemkels had something. But so I'm going up and down the aisle, and I've trained myself to look for one specific figure and one variant of said figure. And so I get to this one booth and I'm like, do you have the legacy collection Ugnaughts? And they're like, well, let me think. And so I show them, like, this is what the legacy collection figure looks like. And they go, I don't have it, but the guy down there might have it. He was pointing. So they have like three vendor tables all set up to look like it's just one long vendor.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't sure where one vendor ended and where one began. So had he not pointed me in that direction, I might not have gone this way. But I see all these vintage figures on the wall, and I'm scanning them. I'm looking at them, and I see an R5, and that's the variant I'm always looking for in the event that someone mismarks the Red Bar R5 for $40. And sure enough, someone had mismarked the Red Bar R5 for $40. So I stopped recording. This is like 7:30 at night. The show closes in a half hour. This thing is not going to make it to tomorrow. So I run over to Rich. Or make it through the end of the day tomorrow. I run over to Rich. I'm like, dude, are there Red Bar fakes out there? He's like, yeah, I'm sure, but why? I'm like, this dude over here selling it for $40. He's like, well, buy it. He's like, take the risk and buy it. And so I'm like, well, if I do that, then if I buy a fake R5, then I might not be able to buy the artwork. So I'm doing all this thing in my head, and I call Narayan real quick because I wanted to know, like, what should I look out for? What are the hallmark traits of a Red Bar R5, and it went straight to voicemail. So then I call you real quick, and I'm like, do you know of any fakes? And you're like, just buy it. I'm like, all right, well, if two of my friends are telling me to just buy it, I gotta go over and buy it. So I walk over and I'm like, trying to like play it cool. Like, I do want to walk right up to it and be like, I want this one right here for $40. I want the R5. And the vendor was like, I know that there's a variant out there of this, but I don't know if this is it or not. So I gave him $100. He gave me the 60 back, and I walk away with a Red Bar for $40.
No, there is no variant of this. I don't know what
about. Yeah, exactly. When he said that, I was just so crushed, because if you know it's a variant, then why don't you look into it unless you know it's fake?
Right.
I mean, the alternative is he knew what he had. Maybe he bought it for $5 and decided to offer it for $40 and then played stupid. So that's the flip side of that possibility. But I kind of feel like he didn't know.
No.
So I felt really guilty about it, because I'm like, I could be ripping this guy off. I should be giving him, I don't know, 20 times that, whatever the case may be.
Well, let me put it to you this way. So I saw one yesterday at Second Chance, and it was way worse shape, and they wanted $300 for it.
Yeah, there was one that sold on Facebook on one of those pages for $850 the day I bought this for $40. That one looked a little bit nicer, so this could be like a $700 figure.
Right.
So show it to Rich, but
no. I was right.
Right, right. So I showed the red bar to Rich, and he's like, this looks like a real sticker. So we took it over to the guy that runs Cantina Collectibles. Shout out to him, because he's like, he thought it was real, but then he thought the sticker was too high up on the body. But then he went to pull out a regular R5 to compare it with, and he thought it was real. By then, I had, and Ryan had seen my photos, and he was telling me, look for this piece, look for this piece, look for this piece. And since then, I've looked at some of the fakes. I see that the screw inside of it is the correct screw. So I'm pretty confident in saying that this is a real red bar for $40, which was a steal.
Right. No, I think it's good, because it did. Once I saw pictures of the sticker, it kind of concerned me a little bit because it was wrinkled. Like they just threw it on there real quick. But
doesn't everybody, have that.
Huh?
It doesn't have that.
Not wrinkled, but the where it went together was kind of weird.
Oh.
Where the, it
didn't
overlapped.
Meet up right.
Yeah. And that kind of concerned me a little bit. But then I was also like, for $40, even if it's a fake sticker, if the figure's real, you could still get some of your money back and just be like, the sticker's fake, but the figure's real. But yeah, it, everybody I talked to, even when I was at Second Chance, they were like, that damn Jason, $40 for a red bar. What's up with that?
I don't know.
That's dude. That's even. I'm still kicking myself for the one that I missed one for like $4. That was a beater. That, it just you just don't. I just wasn't paying attention to it. And the guy was like, "Oh yeah, I had a red bar in there in the $4 bin." And you're just like, and this was back when you probably could have got $100 for that beater red bar. Now they're probably in the $300 to $400 range. But I do the red bars and the Jawas, not the Jawas, the Sand People.
Yeah.
For a hollow cheek.
I was going to say, I went back out after that to do more videoing, and I was looking at the Sand People. So who knows? We'll see. There
was one guy that had one at the last Powder Springs meetup, and it was freaking nice. And I was like, I didn't know 100% pricing. I'm like, they're $200 to $300. And then I'd ask another $50, maybe $100 on top of that, because this one's that nice. Mm. And because it was cherry. No paint rub or anything.
I mean, if a beater's $300, I would imagine a nice one has to be like $600.
Yeah.
There's this curve. It gets higher, the nicer the figure gets. As you get closer to like 100% complete and 100% in great condition, no paint rub, the price is sky high.
Yeah, it's like it goes from a, you know, if you get something graded and it's an 80, that's like average. But then you get an 85 and it's $200-$300 more.
Yeah.
And you're just like, for a point, for 5 points, but that's how people, and then you get a 90, forget about it.
Saturday. So Saturday I had less money, obviously, because I bought the red bar. Boo hoo for me. I did make a deal, $250 for that artwork. So I was able to get the artwork and still have $10 left over. I actually had $15 because I had an extra $5. So I went there with $305 in cash. And then there was a Zelda poster from 1988 that I really wanted. The first day it was $40. The second day it was $30. And on the final day it was $20. I had $15 left in my pocket. And I said, I'll give you $15 for that. He said, sure. So I was able to get everything I wanted. And then on my way out of the facility, I stopped by this one booth that had an Action Fleet TIE Defender. They wanted $150, and this is Sunday, and I'm like, I'm going to push myself here. Would you do 90 on it? Because I think that thing is worth like $400, and no one's paying any attention to it for $150. Not that I'm looking for an investment. I've wanted that for a long time, and he's like, 100. I'm like, deal.
Because
if I went on eBay right now, I can get the same thing for like $400. So
right.
I did go $100 over budget, but the value of what I've purchased is exceedingly of that. So
you can always sell that red bar and make all your money plus. Yeah, back.
Everyone's like, you should sell. I'm like, can I just
enjoy having it?
Enjoy it? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no. Go ahead.
Immediately flip it.
No, man, enjoy that thing. That you've got a story. When you can find something and then have a story behind it, there's no need to trade it.
Yeah. So I was ecstatic to have it, and he went around the show. I saw FJ, Mike, and Vicky. They walked by the booth, and I showed him my red bar. And FJ had picked up a bunch of Ewok stuff. Mike and Vicky, I must have met them at ICCCC, but I just don't remember.
Uh-huh.
meeting, like I know them. I've met them somewhere. But I was like an idiot, like, oh, it's nice to meet you. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I've met them already.
I don't know where you would have met them, but
I've met them before.
Okay. Yeah, those are good people. I've been to their house a few times. They're good people. FJ, if I've met FJ, it's been in passing.
Yeah, all stellar people right there. So
yeah. So I mean, if you
see them.
Yeah. There could what? Yeah. Anyway. What? Sorry, nothing.
I did moderate the book panel. It was cool to see Wayne up there.
Mm.
It's like he's doing it. And I opened up for questions in the room, and one guy raised his hand. He's like, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to say, I just backed the book.
Awesome.
So like as they were giving the panel, someone backed his book, which was awesome. And
it was cool because they did like people to see at PowerCon. And you have like Rich then you'll see like Tim Effler and then Todd Osborne. And then there's Wayne, and you're just like, Wayne's up there with the big boys.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great to hang out with everyone. Tim Effler showed up for Saturday, Sunday. So, that was cool. I didn't get back until, 3 AM, Monday morning. I got up at 6 to go to work, and I'm like, nope. So I went back to sleep, and I was like, I'll be an hour late. It's fine. I woke up at 7. I tried to get in the shower, and I felt really dizzy.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not driving. You'd be proud of me. I was up until like 1, 1:30 every single night.
Dude, I am proud of you.
I didn't complain. Just went along with the flow. We had a blast.
That's the show where you got to do it, man, because you could make some serious connections at that show.
Yeah, we met Tim... I'll say Connor. He is the designer and the sculptor and the guy who created Boglins.
Okay.
And we were sitting at dinner one night, Wayne, myself, Rich, and Bill, who's a friend of Rich. And they see Tim come over. And I thought they meant Tim Effler. He was sitting at the bar by himself, and they flagged him over. So he sat with us and had his dinner, and he told us stories about just like life growing up in in Brooklyn, and how his grandparents saw Babe Ruth. His dad saw Mickey Mantle. It was amazing. It was just cool to listen and tell stories. And it was like nothing to do with action figures. And, you know, the next day we see each other, we're like, hey, how's it going?
Very cool.
In passing. So yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah. I think Boglins are starting to make a little bit of a comeback. You're starting to see them more and more at shows.
Yeah. There was a vendor who took the Madballs. Remember those?
Yeah.
And they made action figures of them. So like the Madball itself is the head, but now they've got bodies to go with that head.
Man, that sounds cool.
Those were cool. Battletoads, Four Horsemen. Everybody was just lining up for Four Horsemen. On every single day.
I'd have been right in that line with them, man. Oh yeah, you did bring me back a Cosmic Legion. You picked me up a one of the Cosmic Legions. I forgot to mention that earlier. I
got some Gladiator dude for Jordan.
Yeah, we were like, are we going to make Jordan? Are we going to make Jason our mule and bring us back some Cosmic Legion, some Four Horsemen stuff?
Spoiler alert, yes.
Yes, we did. Dude, you were showing me pictures, and there's people with like buying like thousands of dollars worth of Four Horsemen stuff.
Yeah, they had a pop-up, like a radio flyer, but it was like a pop-up thing.
Yeah, the stuff you see, you see that a lot at baseball games, at like youth baseball games and stuff.
Yeah, so they had that thing stacked like 6 feet tall. Walking out of the place with all of the exclusives. Like I said, they had the Battletoads, and those boxes were big. That was an old Nintendo game.
Yeah.
Battletoads, for those that don't know. But yeah, it was cool to see all of the stuff that Super 7 was making. We got to hang out with a couple of the people from Super 7. Well, Rich did. Wayne and I were actually hanging out at the bar Saturday night. And yeah. Just an absolute blast. I love it. I can't thank Blue Milk enough for taking me along as a volunteer helper. If you haven't bought that Vintage Collection Archive Edition book, make sure you buy it. There's not going to be a second run on that. So once it's out, it's out.
Yeah, PowerCon. I had major FOMO that weekend. So I have to figure out a way to fit in Rich's trunk next year or something, or in a bag.
But there was tons and tons of Star Wars everywhere at PowerCon, but not a lot seemed to be moving, because as I would walk around a couple times, very little of it was moving. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Is it because it's the Masters of the Universe? con, or is it because just Star Wars has peaked?
I think Star Wars is cooling.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think they've gotten, it's gotten, I don't want to say elitist, but you've got to have money to get into it. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people are wanting, you know, the beaters are kind of moving, but yeah, I really think it's peaked and people are just tired of it.
Yeah. I'm wondering if prices is one thing, the new content not resonating enough with people. You know, are people just like, I'm going to go get Mask instead because that's more affordable, or at least it was. But
yeah,
I think, it's cooling.
Yeah, I think you've got people moving on to like the Boglins and the odd. I think that the the Four Horsemen, and you've got Fresh Monkey, and you've got that kind of stuff that where you're paying $40 a figure, that those have come so far, and I think that's where a lot of people are leaning towards, and because that's where I'm going. You know, I've said it before that Four Horsemen's gotten my money. Fresh Monkey, Big Bad Toy Store, Fresh Monkey's doing Monster Squad. I've got four or five figures at $40 a piece on pre-order with Big Bad Toy Store, waiting for those to come out. It's just something new. It's something fresh. You're like, they look incredible, and they blow the Black Series out the water. And like you, and I think it's pricing, because you're paying $25 for the Deluxe Sabine, and the only reason I'm doing it is because it's a Deluxe Sabine. You know, it's a Sabine.
Yeah.
Everybody's griping about how big her bucket is, when they should make it a swappable head versus a bucket.
Yeah, I don't know why they made that choice.
The only reason I can think that they would make that choice is so that she can hold it and it wouldn't be weird. You wouldn't have a peg, but they could change the peg around, you know, put the peg on the neck versus on the head. I think the designer toys, that's the word I was looking for. Designer toys are coming such a long way, and they're just, there's just tons of them. And that's the one thing I saw at PowerCon, that there was a lot of designer toys vendors out there that they weren't necessarily selling, but they're like, here's my toys. You know, this is, you can pre-order them and come look at my stuff. And, I noticed that at Joe Fest. And I started seeing it like in Cincinnati a couple of years ago, and you're not paying attention to it. And now all of a sudden it's got my attention. And I think Toylana should bring some of those guys in next year. It'd be cool. More than just Four Horsemen, maybe bring in Fresh Monkey. And I don't know of any, I know there is it Action Force or something that's a bunch of like G.I. Joe style people.
Yes.
And they've got, they were doing a piece, like you were saying, the
Kickstarter crowdfunding
for Thundercats. Yeah, that $600 thing that they were doing a truck that they debuted at Joe Fest that was like $250, where it would have been $500-$600 through Hasbro.
Mm-hmm.
So the designer toy, I think Star Wars is cooling and people are spending their money elsewhere. People still got money to spend, but they're not spending it on Star Wars.
Yeah, it's just not an easy easy hobby to get into, easy niche, I should say, whatever genre of the hobby, Star Wars.
Right.
I think.
Go ahead.
No, I think in 20 years, when we look back and look at Star Wars and be like, if it continues to decline, you know, where did it start? I think people will look at the moment Lucasfilm said no more to the EU or the old version, which I get because they got to tell stories and move forward, and they can't explain, well, this supposedly happens in one book, so how did this happen and this happen at the same time in the movies?
Right.
You know, they can't have two different things like that, so they gutted it. But I do think that was just a crushing blow to the Star Wars community, and that just probably, if it doesn't matter, then why should I care? And they probably just walked away.
Yeah. Yeah, that did suck. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. They had to do it because it was getting to the point, because I did ask that question one time at a panel at Dragon Con with a bunch of writers, and they were like, it was hard to write a book because they're having to do research 200 other books for a one liner in their book to make sure everything's good. As a writer, it was sort of a relief to them. But then again, as a fan, you're like, you just ruined you know, 20 years worth of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't think, I don't think Lucasfilm itself represents what it used to represent. Because I think, well, at least for me, when I first saw that Lucasfilm logo, I'm like, yes, this is going to be amazing. And now it's more like, I hope I like this one. You know?
Yeah.
So I just, I think people are cool. Another observation that I had at PowerCon, and this is more about the hobby in general.
Uh-huh.
The demographic of the people who were there, like 40 above. There were kids there, but a lot of it was like 40 and above. And then if I looked at, and this is not everything, but when I looked at the toy companies and what they were making, you know, they were making Silverhawks. There was one that was a Brave Star inspired toy line. Dinosaur, the Jim Henson movie with the baby.
Not the mama. Yeah.
And Ninja Turtles, those are being made. Thundercats, He-Man, Biker Mice from Mars. Like I said, I kept saying Battletoads. I mean, that's an NES game. So this is the first time they're making, I think this is the first time they're making toys for that, based on that. I think Super 7 had G.I. Joe, but they're the ones based on the cartoons. So what I'm saying is a lot of these new toys are just based on old stuff.
Right.
I mean, there were new toys there, but it just seems like the hobby is more focused to the 40 and up. So what happens to them? I think we're at a weird conjecture because there's a lot of Star Wars. It wasn't moving. It was just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's having fun and a blast, but I'm just taking a look like, you know, I was just trying to see the end of it. And it's good. There's going to be an end to the hobby at some point because kids don't care about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, like you were just mentioning all the stuff that's coming out. I think our attention is divided. It used to be Star Wars, because that's what there is. And now you've got people, you know, doing everything else from our childhood, and they're a lot better sculpts than what Star Wars is putting out. So that's where the money's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of doom and gloom.
Yeah, it is.
It's not well, intended. I mean,
and also like yesterday, Mandy saw like a wicket for $30 with a spear. And she was like, that's a great deal. I'm like, but do you need it? No. And she put it back.
A vintage one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, we've got a whole ton of wickets. But it was a steal. Huh? Yeah,
I should have stolen it because I need a wicket.
Yeah, and I it's Nerd You. They're the ones that got it. So you probably mentioned
it. It's probably gone now that we've promoted it. Oh, no, wicket for $30. I'm gonna go buy it. That went great.
He also had a prune face for $40 complete, and I need a prune face rifle, and I really thought about buying that. But it's hard for me to spend $40 on something I'm only gonna take the rifle from. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I saw it yesterday, dude. Star Wars is definitely cooling. It's definitely cooling.
I also think if Hasbro ever walked away from the Star Wars license, if some of it's gotten shuffled. I know like Hasbro's lost some Disney stuff and it's gone to Mattel. I don't think Hasbro's going to let the Star Wars license go, but I think if they did, that'd be the end of collecting for a lot of people.
Really?
Yeah, because I think that's an exit point. I mean, look at all the people that left when they switched boxes for the Black Series to the closed box. There was a huge dip in numbers. I think if it went to Mattel, people might like step away and say, okay, we're good. We've got all the Kenner, which bled into the Hasbro era, to use the Taylor Swift term. And now we're in the Mattel era, for example.
I mean, do you think if... But let's say like somebody like Super 7 or the Four Horsemen picked up the line and they did those crazy sculpts. Do you think it would bring people back?
It's possible, but yeah.
You'd have to rebuy everything because it'd be new sculpts. But Hasbro. I don't know. I don't want to say it's gotten stale with Hasbro, but it's gotten stale a little bit with them.
Yeah, well, can they afford the license to have a Star Wars thing too? Because Right. Do you need to be a mega corporation like Hasbro mm-hmm. to afford the licensing fee that Disney demands for that line?
Mm-hmm.
Could a smaller company like that put? I don't know. I'm not connected. I don't have the money or wherewithal. I'm just asking the question out loud.
Right. I don't know. I mean, would they do like, okay, we're going to do a smaller licensing fee to help a smaller company out, but that's Disney, and Disney doesn't do that.
Disney doesn't do discounts.
Right. Are they just like, well, we're going to do it ourselves? But I don't know if Disney couldn't do that. Could they? Could Disney produce a Star Wars line?
No, not on their own. They're not toy makers. They're they have their stuff, but it's like one person works on one thing and then it goes into the stores. They're not working on an entire wave of Star Wars figures.
Right.
They have their droids thing, and I think that's all they can do.
Okay.
Which I did get that Frankenstein droid.
Dude, I wanted that. I looked on.
Is it sold out?
It's not on Shop Disney anymore, but I think it's on the you can still get it in stores or like in at Disney World. Because they were doing free shipping, and I was like, that would be the one holdup, because shipping always kills me when you buy one thing. You buy something for $15, and you got to pay $9 to ship it.
Okay. Yes. Yes, that's right for Disney.
So
unless
it
you
always
get one of the free
me.
Ship days.
Right. Well, that's what I was waiting on. They did a free ship day, and when I went to go buy it, it was not there. It's gone.
Yeah, so you just got to factor that into the cost of a Shop Disney thing. It's really not $14. It's $25. Do I want this for $25?
Right. And I didn't want it for $25. I wanted it, but then you would have to go buy all the other choppers.
Okay, do it. Do it.
Yeah.
Buy all the choppers.
I should have. Then
do
I could
it.
Put
Stormtrooper. 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 Do it. Okay, I'm done. We could finish up with some news, because
let's
there's
do some news.
There's some good news,
but
there's some bad news. So let's get through the bad news. And this is on Jedi Temple Archives if you want the full report. But Hasbro's revenue went down 10% in the second quarter of the year, and their partner brands, which are things like the Marvels and the Star Warses and all the other licensed items, was down 21%. So that's a big drop there. So, I mean, I don't think you need to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out that higher prices is turning people away. No one wants to spend $25 for a vintage collection figure.
Right.
And there's also nothing exciting about repacking and repainting. There's just nothing about that's like, oh, here's, take my money. Shut up and take my money for that carbonized trooper you've made.
Right. And they're doing a whole they're still doing that.
They're still doing that. I worry about that last wave. Cause when I'm talking to Rich, and you know, he is a subject matter expert when it comes to vintage collection, because he's interviewed the people, and it was the deep cuts towards the end of that first wave, like the expanded universe characters. And when they started to stretch, that's the reason people stopped buying, and it's ended the line. Because there's nothing exciting. And so when you look at this next wave, which is 75%-ish repaints and repacks, that's not exciting. I'm worried, like, oh no, is this the end?
Maybe. I guess we'll see. Go ahead.
We were speculating on, this is so stupid. This is such a nerdy thing. But when you've got 8 hours in the car, you try to figure things out. So VC-100 was Starkiller. VC-200 was the Emperor. And so they're about to hit VC-300. And we're trying to figure out who that might be. Any guesses? I think it was Rich that thought this one, which I think is perfect. They're making from Obi-Wan, they're doing the duel, Darth Vader versus Obi-Wan. So I think like a battle. Whoa, what's going on with my voice? That laugh you made.
Blame it on the Diet Coke.
Diet Coke, making you lose your voice since copyright 2023. where was I? Oh, so I think the Obi-Wan version of Darth Vader is going to be VC-300.
Okay.
That's what we landed on, because all the other guys were bad guys.
Okay, that makes sense. No, I was thinking something more along the line. I was like, they're not going to do Ahsoka because they've done 15 Ahsokas.
No, it's either that or Count Dooku. I think they're going to stay with the evil theme.
Well, then let's say Count Dooku just to be different. Because have they done a Count Dooku?
Yeah, he was announced as part of that wave. He was in the 25% newness of that wave. I've watched, they're going to be like, use some sort of officer pants, so half of it's even repainted.
Dude, as long as they do it good, who cares? Dude, look at the Cosmic Legions and Mythic Legions. The legs are all repacks. They've all repainted the legs. There's been several figures on Mythic Legions that they've repainted that you're just like, I don't care, because they do such a good job repainting this figure that you don't, because they did a Battle Cat and Panther, and they're the same sculpt. Hmm. There's different pieces, but it's just the 90% of the same sculpt, and they did such a good job on those two figures that you don't care that they're repaints, and you put them side by side, and they look great.
Call me when they carbonize them. Then I'll be interested.
I'm waiting on that, yes. Maybe with the Cosmic Legions, they'll carbonize stuff, but...
Yeah, I think... if Hasbro did that, it'd be fine, but when they start carbonizing things...
Right.
After that... And you see them continue to reuse things, it's like you probably jumped the shark with the carbonization. You shouldn't have done that. I would have been fine like you, but now I see it. It's so blatant. Mm-hmm. Give me something new.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't mind them reusing pieces and parts. Just give me a new figure.
Yeah.
As long as you do it right, I don't care. Don't keep here I am bitching about repaints of Boba Fett, and I just bought two of them. But
I didn't see any Micro Galaxy Squadron stuff at the convention.
There was some there yesterday, but it was all, it was like at one or two vendors.
Yeah, this is all. Yeah, there was none of that there. That was another observation I made that I forgot to mention.
Yeah, there was somebody had an AT-AT that he's wanting like $80 for, and then I think he wanted $60 for the shuttle. And I'm like, I can find those in the store. They're not that hard to find.
Hey Glenn, what day is it?
It's Sunday. Okay, but today's Tuesday. When this is released, it's Tuesday.
And who shows up on Tuesday?
Ahsoka shows up at 9 p.m. on Tuesday.
Sabine shows up.
Sabine. Oh, dude, I don't know if we're gonna see her. I don't know if we're gonna see her, but I on this episode, but I think,
do you know something?
No, I don't know something, but I think the way they're going to do, we may see Sabine at the end of the second episode. That's me thinking, but I have a feeling that it's going to be a lot of groundwork for the first couple like it normally is.
Do you know something?
I don't know something.
Because Mando 3 just jumped into it.
Did they?
There was that one conversation with the armorer where he was setting up like the recap. Oh, I've done this and I've done this. And now I'm doing this. And now I need this from you.
Well, they showed like a 30-second clip of Hera fighting in the air, going after a ship in the Phantom 2. And then you had Ahsoka fighting that robot and the new Inquisitor on the ground. So that's why I'm assuming that's maybe how it starts, but I don't know.
Yeah, I guess if there's like, I think she'll show up. If they did that, it would be the end of the first episode. Cause I think at some point Hera's like, you need help and you need to know, who you need to talk to.
Right.
All right, great. And then they go to Mothal and there's the epilogue scene from. Anyways, moving on.
Dude, I watch my Mandy's rewatching Rebels, and we saw Jedi Knight last night. She was just like, she's like, why do you have tissues? Because I knew it was coming. And she was just like, why'd you bring tissues? And then she didn't, then it's just me losing it. And she was like, oh, that's why you brought I'm like, just let me enjoy this moment. Just let me have my moment, please.
I'm crying from laughing. I'm trying not to laugh so hard. I saw a reel today on, I don't remember if it was Instagram or Facebook, where someone was like, the new Kanan Jarrus minifigures leaked, and they cut to that new version of the ghost, and they cut to the back to Jason Syndulla, who's standing next to a flame, and they focus in on the flame as the new minifig for Kanan Jarrus.
Dude, it's so bad. I'm like, really? Because you see like the cartoon versions with the live versions, and it's all of them are Kanan as dust. And I'm like, why are you doing that, man? You guys suck. Just stop. Just please stop. But Yeah, and also somebody in like the West Virginia group was, because that Sam had posted in the West Virginia group that, or somebody was, no, not Sam didn't, but somebody was just like, why did they do this? They moved it to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays and blah, I'm mad. And I'm like, why are you mad? You get to watch it at 9 p.m. on Tuesday instead of waking up at 4 a.m. on Wednesday, and yeah, you get to see it with a fresh set of eyes instead of being dead tired and not understanding half of the show. And he's like, well, I go to bed at 9 and wake up at 3. And I'm like,
watch then
just stay the off of Facebook and go to bed and wake up and watch the damn show and shut up and enjoy it. And sorry. And I'm
Mr. Glenn, where did you just go?
I'm so hyped up for this show. I've been waiting 5 years for it and knowing it's coming for 2. So I'm ready for it. And I'm excited that they moved it to Tuesdays at 9 PM. Because then I can watch it and enjoy it. And be bright eyed and bushy tailed instead of dead tired at 4 AM watching it. And you don't have to worry about spoilers. My only concern is I'm hoping we don't crash Disney Plus. Because you know everybody in the freaking world will be like, it's on,
it's been tested, it's good.
Better Call Saul was supposed to be like that and it crashed AMC Plus.
Game of Thrones did that with HBO too.
You want to see a pissed off 47 year old man, dude? I was at Second Chance yesterday and Chance was like, hey man, we're thinking of doing we did a watch party for Obi-Wan. And we were thinking about doing it for Rebel, for Ahsoka. And then they kind of talked for a minute and they go, yeah, we mentioned it to Kelly. And Kelly was like, I don't want to do it. And they're like, why? And he goes, do you want to see me cry? No. And then they were like, there's the same
grown man cry.
Yeah. Do you want to see a 47 year old man cry like a little baby?
Hey, we need to redefine what being a man is, and it's okay to cry.
It totally is okay to cry, dude. You need to show your emotions. And
unless you're in Texas.
Yeah. Even in Texas, I think he'd be all right. But that's why I learned a long time ago, you do not hold your emotions in. And that's why I'm the way I am, is I refuse to hold my emotions in, you know. Hey, did you see she was going to be at Disneyland, Ahsoka?
Yeah. Great for the Disneylanders.
I'm so mad.
Don't forget us on the East.
I understand why they do it, because apparently it's a lesser crowded park, but
yeah.
I've seen memes. Have you seen the memes where people are like, or it's more TikToks, but it's people that are used to going to Disney World and then they go to Disneyland and they're like, rope dropping, and nobody's rope dropping at Disneyland, and nobody's running. They're so used to, you know, it's just a totally different park.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what else? Oh, dude. So, and then I've got 2 questions and then we can wrap it up. So like they did a fan event for Ahsoka.
Yeah.
And this is sort of me griping. It's going to be back to the angry Glenn here in a second.
Oh, but hold on. Let me get a teddy bear to protect me.
it's me being a little bit aggravated because they were going to do like a big red carpet event for Ahsoka, and they ended up doing a fan event on Thursday. When they announced, like before the writer strike, Rosario Dawson was doing one of those raffles, you know, where you can donate to whatever charity she liked or donate to charity and you buy raffle tickets. And she was going to fly somebody out to that event.
Yeah.
And be her guest and blah, blah, blah. Get to have the whole red carpet experience. Well, I was like, $10. Let me get some tickets. Well, then the writer strike happened and that disappeared. I never saw Mandy's the one that handles the finances. So I never saw a refund come through. Never got an email saying, hey, the writer strike, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, should they have refunded everybody's money or at least sent an email going, hey, do you still want the money? Do you still feel like donating? Or, you know, yes.
The latter.
That at least send an email out going, hey, this is what happens.
No. An email like you were just saying, do you want to continue with this donation or would you like a refund?
Yeah. And I never got an email. I even went back to like the congratulations or thanks for donating and went to look for it on the website. It's gone.
Well, if you want, I'll give you $10. Donate that to charity.
It's fine, but it's just, I find it really annoying because that's happened to me several times where you like, it's a progressive thing, a progressive contest where you've got to keep up with it every day.
Yeah.
And you're doing awesome and you're winning and you're on top of it. And then all of a sudden they stop doing the contest and you're like, what the hell? I was winning this thing.
Yeah.
So it just, it's annoying. It's a personal annoyance.
The fact that it's like a big company that's put this together and orchestrated it, like I'm talking about the system itself. The system that was devised to take the money and to randomly select a number and all that. That's another company outside of it that Lucasfilm hired and doing Rogue Fun. I did look up online to see if there was some sort of ticketing system that we can use. And the one company that seemed to come up quite often wasn't paying people for the money. They would just take the money and they wouldn't give it to the organizations. There was like charitable organizations out like $60,000 because the company that took the money, the website, didn't give it out. They just kept it for themselves. So when you kind of like, that's my concern with that. It's like, is it really going to charity or is it just going to tech bro from Silicon Valley or something?
Right. I don't know. I mean, this wasn't because this wasn't the main company that does it. It was a different company that did it because I think it's like Omaze or something that does that's the major company that does that kind of stuff. And this
the
wasn't
force
them.
For change.
Yeah. And I just found it annoying. It was like you could take the 5 minutes and message everybody because you have all of our, you know, it take you 2 minutes to put an email out and hit send or reply all or whatever. But whatever. It was like,
you're entitled to be upset.
Yeah.
Is that what your question was?
Am I entitled to be upset? But it's only $10. So I'm done being upset.
Okay.
I can be upset for a few minutes, but it's not worth ruining my day over $10 because if, you know, I spend more than a half an hour on it, I've wasted $10 worth of my time.
What if a superfan gave $1,000 to try to increase their chance? You know, what happens then?
Right. That's more what I'm concerned about. Because you can donate a bunch of money to this thing.
Or I can just go up to the local Habitat for Humanity and say, here's $1,000.
Right. But. So,
Question two.
Question two. Do you think it'd be weird? Because when I was going through my carded figures, I have the Darth Maul and Ahsoka from Clone Wars, from the end of Clone Wars, and those figures are not not holding their value or whatever. They're basically retail, so they're $15-$20 figures. Would it be weird if I open those up and put them in my Ghost, even though they're from Clone Wars?
No.
Okay.
You do you.
I'm just asking because, you know, it's not the same thing. It's not the same show, but.
No, what I think you should do is go out to eBay and buy loose figures and keep yours preserved in the packaging. Is that what you're asking me? I don't.
More asking, would it look weird if they were not the Rebels versions of those figures in the Ghost?
Would it bother you?
No.
Then there's your answer. You're good.
Because I did buy two Thrawns, so I can open one and put it with the Ghost and then keep one packaged because it has a Rebels packaging on it.
There isn't a TVC Darth Maul with the robot legs.
That may be him. Well, it's from Clone Wars, so he's got the robot
but there's
legs.
There's a vintage collection version if you really wanted to stay consistent with the vintage collection.
Mm-hmm.
There's a version of that.
But then again, the way that I'm thinking I'm going to have to display this, I don't know if people are ever going to see the inside of it unless I take it down and, you know, I'll know in a year when I get it. So.
Cool.
I'm pretty excited. Dude, that thing is cool. Do you think it's going to hit 17?
Maybe. It's definitely going to get to like 14. It just depends on those last 2-3 days. That's when the people who have the FOMO, like they've been waiting and it's like, oh, I guess I got to do this now.
Uh-huh.
That's when they strike. And it depends on how high it will go. I don't think it's going to hit the 28,000 that the Razor Crest hit. I think part of the reason why it hit so high is because people were looking at the sale barge saying, this is the next big investment thing that I can buy and resell. And when the time came, the Razor Crest you could still get for like $400 or $500. It's not that, if you have the money, it's not that tough to find.
Right. You could, yeah, you could still, they're where their sail barge is hitting thousands of dollars. You could, yeah, $500-$600, maybe $700 on a bad day. You can get a Razor Crest. You can, yeah, Razor Crest or $500 on a good day, $700 on a bad.
And like we're saying, it's cooling. So people aren't interested in buying that stuff.
Right.
I think this is just my latest theory.
Yeah. I've never watched a HasLab. So this is my first HasLab that I've paid attention to. But then I've heard.
Baby's first HasLab.
Yeah.
You were saying?
But I don't know. People, like I was talking to Tony and with the G.I. Joe, the helicopter, they paused everything. They're like, we're having computer issues and we're going to make it last an extra day. And then got like 5,000 more backers in a day.
We'll see. I don't think that's necessary. They don't need to do that, but yeah, you can get like thousands in a day. It'll happen.
Yeah, it's slowly. I think I just checked it. It's at 10,700.
Yeah.
So sometime this week it'll hit 11. It's really weird because it's like creeping and creeping and creeping. And then I've also heard a rumor, and then all of a sudden it's there. But I've also heard a rumor that the Asia one, the HasLab Asia, that their numbers are a couple of hundred less than the American. So I heard a rumor that they're two different counts. So if you add them together, they're already at 20,000. That it's not the same. Am I making sense? That the
I think so.
Like the American ones has one count, and then the America, Asian one.
I get that.
The one in Asia, they have a different count.
Okay.
So that one's at like 10,000, like 200 less than the one in America.
I don't know. We'll see. So, I do think I think we get Kanan. I don't know if we'll get Zeb. That's the one I'm worried about.
Yeah, Zeb. I'd love to get Zeb. It'd be.
Here we
go. It's heartbreaking to me that we're not getting Sabine on that card back. Okay. I think if they would have done Sabine, I think it would have pushed it. But and I think it was a half-ass excuse. Oh, the Sabine, you can get the deluxe figure of Sabine. It's like, that's the wrong freaking Sabine, guys.
Is that something they could repack?
Probably.
Yeah, we'll do it then. Yeah. It was a rhetorical question. As I said it, I'm like,
I think they're going to repack all those figures, even though they're like, this, you're not going to get this figure again, but I think they'll repack all those figures. There's been too much with that sail barge that they keep pushing that sail barge and keep bringing figures in for that sail barge. They'll do the same thing for the Ghost. Fingers crossed.
My friend just texted me something. I don't understand what he said. Anyways, the directors of Ahsoka.
Yes.
They released that. Chapter one is Dave Filoni. Chapter two and three is Steph Green. She directed episodes of Book of Boba Fett. Peter Ramsey is chapter four. He directed Mando. Some unknown Dave Filoni is chapter five. Chapter six is Jennifer Getzinger. Who did Getzinger, Westworld. She directed episodes of Westworld.
Okay.
Rita Vasant Patel directed episodes of House of the Dragon. And then Rick Famuyiwa, who's done executive produced season three. He's directed the episodes. He was also one of the X-Wing pilots in the first season. He comes back to direct chapter eight.
Interesting.
That's the one Bryce.
Go ahead.
No Bryce Dallas Howard, but I thought she was acting in this.
That'd be interesting.
Maybe not. I don't know where I read that.
Hmm.
If that's even true. Where was I going with all of this? I'm really looking forward. They've hinted that this is the Empire Strikes Back of the Mandoverse.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to see.
I'm curious if we're going to see Mando in it. Because all this stuff is happening at the same time as Mandalorian. So are we going to see the scene where like that the planet where Ahsoka goes and she meets up with Mando when she's hunting the whatever her name is? Are we going to see that? I have a feeling we're going to kind of stay. There's that episode of Mandalorian we'll be hinting at. What?
I just the license plate. I don't even know whose license plate it is. It's 1.21 gigawatts. It took me a second to figure out what the license plate went.
1.21 gigawatts.
Anyway, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
That it?
That's it. I think I'm good.
Okay, so we'll drop in this interview we did with Freddie Thoman. I had asked to see if he can come on this show, but he lives 8 miles out in the country, has Spotty. He says he has to drive 8 miles to his neighbor's computer if he wants to use a computer or something like that. So we wouldn't be able to get him on the show on Zoom if he can't access a computer. So I just sat down with my phone. I sat down with him a couple times to try to record, but every time someone came up and bought something from him. And so he's like, I think you're my good luck charm. He kept selling stuff. So,
well, it's because you're so good looking.
Yeah, it's me. Hey, ladies. hey, gentlemen, would you like to buy a print? So, yeah, he has some great stories. So we'll drop that in. You started at Kenner in 1978.
Yes, sir.
As an intern.
Yep, yep.
A co-op.
Industrial design co-op. Yep. As you probably already know, industrial design is University of Cincinnati. It's a 5-year program because you do, work alternated with school.
Yeah. And what was one of your first projects at Kenner?
At Kenner? Wow.
Do you remember?
Gas and Go truck, I remember, was a little truck that it had a giant oversized, like a gas gauge. And if you rolled it a certain amount of distance, you could see the gas gauge empty. And then you'd have to put a little, filler in it, and it would reset the thing.
Yeah.
So the Gas and Go truck. They'd have me working on assorted things. Ken Kite was the design manager. And, a co-op student is kind of like loaned out. We were kind of like, we got something for him to do today. So I worked on a lot of different projects. He worked on a lot of things like Sears specials. So they might do a special set of action figures and then create a little diorama, a little cardboard diorama or something like that. Other early designs, I worked on the original Alien figures as a co-op. Probably not many people are aware of that, but we actually were pursuing doing a line of action figures for the original Alien movie. And then people are familiar with the 18-inch figure, which is, quite a collector's item.
Yeah.
But we actually were going to do, I love the movie, but, all the main figures, as well as a smaller version of the Alien. And then we were planning on doing die-cast versions of the Nostromo and the Narcissus.
The little one that
The escape pod.
They both escaped through.
Ripley, yes.
Yeah. Ripley and the alien.
And the cat.
Yeah, the cat, yes. All three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when it comes to Star Wars, you got to do the original art for... Planet Hawk playset.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one came first, but there was the Rebel Command Center playset and the Hoth Ice Planet playset. Now, the Rebel Command featured a remolded in white base. See, the original playset, as I recall, was like a Tatooine playset with Jawas. Yeah,
yep.
And the backdrop. The cardboard printed backdrop was the sand crawler. So for specials, we basically just took the same molded base, which it passed for rock, but it also wasn't out of place to look like an ice surface or snow. So we just molded it in white. And then there again, I guess they thought I was a good enough painter that... they allowed me to do the final production artwork on both of those playsets as a student.
As a 19-year-old.
I was basically about 19 years old. And it was like, I didn't realize the significance of that then, but it's kind of wild to look back and like be allowed, do that.
Yeah. So what was the process like of developing that print with Lucasfilm? Was there a lot of changes made to it?
I don't really recall much. I'd have to say, in all honesty, back in the day, and then, of course, if you probably watch the different, Toys That Made Us and different shows like that, you kind of get a sense that in the early days, Kenner with Lucasfilm was kind of groundbreaking, in terms of we're all getting our sea legs here on, you know, how to write contracts and stuff like that. And in terms of, like, say, the Rebel Command Center, Lucasfilm would send us images, you know, pre-production images and stuff of sets and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we would use to compose the illustrations. But what I'm getting at is, although as time went on, I think Lucasfilm became more and more, you know, focused on minute details and making sure things were captured just so. But I don't remember a whole lot of revision back then. I mean, we were basically, I'd love to, you know, kind of a shout out to all people out there listening, that a designer's mentality, we're doing, always trying to do our level best to produce an accurate and faithful representation. Because every once in a while, I'll be stopped by somebody like, well, why didn't you do this toy with, like, a little bit more detail? Or, I don't know if that likeness is just quite like, and I'm like, guys, we wanted it to be as dead on as you do. But sometimes, I remember I worked on the Terminator line, and it was just kind of like, our sculptors were wizards in terms of being able to capture features and stuff. But for some reason, as I recall, we weren't allowed to do an absolute perfect rendition of Arnold Schwarzenegger's face.
Really?
The figures kind of look like Arnold, but they're...
Maybe he didn't sign away his likeness.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, sometimes there are compromises that have to be made that we would rather not. Mm-hmm. But your designers are always like... Designers are always like... The toy collector and the those that play with the toys, I mean, we're your best advocate.
Yeah.
We want to nail it.
Yeah.
But sometimes we're not allowed to, quite frankly.
Yeah. You also developed the AT-ST for Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
What was that process like?
AT-ST, that was probably the Scout Walker or Walker Scout. That's probably one of my earlier Star Wars... Because I worked on a lot of different products in the girls' toys line and stuff like that. Well, you know, looking at photographs and stuff they would send us and images from the movie and trying to basically recreate it. There again, trying to be as faithful as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, even sometimes while they're in production, you know, you might have to commit to tooling detail in advance of what actually ends up in the movie and stuff. So that's another reason why sometimes things are a little bit different, you know, because the lead time to produce a toy typically is a good, you know, full year.
Yeah.
So what I would do is create the technical drawings. We refer to them as pattern drawings, and those would be orthographic views where you do, you know, a detailed front view, side view, rear view, top view, bottom view. And then we would do cutaways, section views, they would call, where you would do a slice, an imaginary slice through the product, and then show in a drawing, like, how that surface changed, you know, so that in order to communicate this to the model makers and the craftsmen who are producing the patterns to be duplicated from, you gave them a cross section so they understood, like, well, this bolt sticks out 30 thousandths of an inch. For those who aren't into decimal equivalents, 30 thousandths is like half of a 16th. 60 thousandths is a 16th.
Yep.
125 thousandths is an eighth. Okay, enough of that. But so you had to spell that out, every surface, every rivet, everything, so that they knew the detail they put on there was accurate to your drawings.
Yeah.
So then those drawings, of course, now this has to go through an approval process. Engineering has to look at it, make sure, you know, choose what plastic, you know, how much deflection, you know. It goes through a whole process.
Brake test, you had said, pressure test.
Oh, yeah. Well, when we get to the point where we had prototype parts or something like that, which is down the line, as I recall, we would do, like, what's called an engineering pilot.
Yeah.
And an engineering pilot, as I recall, was you took 156 shippers of products. And for those out there who are squeamish collectors, this will break your heart. But, like, say, for example, if a typical shipper, if it could hold, say, six Scout Walkers in it, So imagine in the halls of Kenner, there are 156 cases of those. Now, those cases have gone through hell. They've been frozen, they've been thawed, they've been cooked to like 120 degrees inside of semi-trailers, they've been abused, you name it.
Yeah.
All in this for the sake of quality assurance to make sure that the plastic doesn't distort, color doesn't leach out of the parts, so it goes for quite a process. So then all of those shippers have to be opened, typically by the engineer, project engineer, and inspected. And then he would send samples like to the designer and go like, okay, are these colors proper color? You know, if they capture the detail, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's quite a process.
Yeah.
But that's after going to patterns. I'll just circle back.
Yeah, yeah.
The pattern drawings went to pattern makers. In the case of the Scout Walker, it was a vendor in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So the engineer and I, the engineer was name was Ray Drake. He and I flew on a couple of occasions to Grand Rapids, Michigan from Cincinnati, and, you know, to inspect the hardwood patterns. And these patterns were just a work of art. I mean, they were, you know, hardwoods. Detail was done, and like they might use multiple woods. So it wasn't just, you know, this dark brown mass of detail, but it was very artistically done, you know, in the different shades of wood and the grains going in different directions. And so there would usually be, these patterns would typically be done at an enlarged scale. You know, they wouldn't be done at the same size as the actual finished product. So in the case of the Scout Walker, every part there was actually done twice the size. And the reasoning for that is so that the detail could be more faithfully captured. So what they would do is they have these wood patterns. Once they were approved by Lucasfilm, whatever, then it would be pantographed. And pantograph basically is a computer-guided stylus that runs over the patterns back and forth and back and forth, captures all the detail, and then that detail is then translated into a computer file and then cut into the steel itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the first step of doing prototype tools and things like that. So
when you sketch it out, are you thinking about playability? Because the ATST Walker has a lot of playability with the legs moving and stuff. So is that a consideration you're making at the start? Or is that something later down the line with the mechanical engineers?
Well, okay, as far as playability, yes, our designers, we own that. But in the case of the Scout Walker, I mean, obviously we are trying to be faithful to a Lucas design. However, there was some latitude. Like for example, engineering gets into it in that the intricacies, anybody who's, you know, played with a Scout Walker, I mean, the balance involved. I mean, Ray, to get that thing right, to still be faithful to the design, but also balanced so it would stand properly.
Yeah.
And then there's an adjustment on the backside of it, you know, because sometimes the imperfections of molded plastic and stuff, you know, he wouldn't sit necessarily properly. So we had an adjustment on the back of it to that would bring his legs into alignment. But no one ever saw the interior of the Scout Walker in the movie.
Yeah, right.
So that's another example of where I would just create imagined like control panels, imagine like what did the seat look like, try to put on my, you know, Imperial Empire, you know, thinking cap and like, you know, what kind of a padded seat, what kind of styling would it be?
Yeah.
What kind of textures would it have?
Yeah.
You know, so that's very much plays a part of, you know, the stuff that isn't seen. It's like, well, we've got to come up with something that looks like it makes sense inside there.
Yep.
So
one of the cool items you have on display today or that you brought with you are photos of Boba Fett visiting Kenner. How often did that happen and what was that day like?
Well, that only, and that's why I brought these pictures is I thought someone would get a kick out of them.
They're great.
It was approximately, I think it was 1979. And the Boba Fett character I'm sure it wasn't the actor who actually was in the movie, but it was a faithful rendition, perfect replica of the actual, probably was actually used in the film. And Tom Osborne next door is thumbing his nose at me, making fun of me. So this guy shows up, and we hadn't seen any of this stuff before, so we're getting a kick out of this. And this kind of thing would happen from time to time at Kenner. That was what was so cool about it. It was just like, okay, guys, Boba Fett's coming tomorrow. I was like, what? You know? So I was still a co-op student. And I was into photography, and I had a 35-millimeter camera. And I was like, I'm going to bring my camera in. Well, as it turns out, I'm the only person who took pictures of this even happening.
Wow.
Which boggles my mind.
Yeah, it does. That seems crazy.
But it was really kind of like a meet and greet, and like everybody gathered around in the Kroger building, mostly in the 11th floor conference room, which was the level where the prelim people, the rainbow room, we always refer to it. We say the rainbow above where we presented.
Okay.
Rainbow bands of color. And here he comes in, and they brought an assistant with him to help him get his helmet on and stuff like that. And he basically, they paraded him around throughout the whole building. I think, you know, trying to get folks kind of jacked up a little
excited,
bit about,
yeah.
You know, feel involved. Okay. You know, we're doing all this Star Wars kind of stuff. Here's a cool moment for employees. And so I've got all these cool photos of him from different angles with the, you know, his rocket backpack, you know, the hand weapon that he was using. I mean, and he's sitting there on the bench, you know, drinking a 7-Up and stuff like that, you know. So it's all legit. And
yeah.
It's a really cool
that's
moment.
Gotta be really cool.
And these are the only pictures that exist.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's crazy. So.
Well, I have to run to a panel, but yeah. I want to say thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
These are amazing stories.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, real quick, the Death Star place, the Escape from the Death Star board game.
Yeah.
You have alternative art here.
Yes.
What's the story behind that real quick? Real quick.
Okay. Well, as a snot-nosed student and lover of the Star Wars movie, I kind of disagreed with the direction that the original board game that Kenner released took.
Yeah.
Now, there are good reasons why, you know, they were producing a line appearance and look.
Yeah.
That's legit. But I was all ate up with Star Wars, so I wanted to do my own version. So I did an alternate illustration of the Millennium Falcon being attacked by TIE fighters and the Death Star in the background.
Yeah.
So
it's great.
Yeah, well, thank
I like
you.
It a lot.
It's a gouache, opaque watercolor gouache painting.
Okay.
So
very cool.
But like I said, I was being a punk, and I was just like, well, I think it should look like this. And it's like, yeah, shut up. Get back to work.
Do what we ask you to do. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Rogue Fun is a 3-day event that showcases the passion, knowledge, talent, and contribution to the Star Wars collecting hobby by those living in the state of Georgia. The event is held Friday, May 3rd through Sunday, May 5th, 2024. It'll include collector-focused panels, open collection tours, special guests, food, swag, and most importantly, our friends across the galaxy. So you need to be a member of the GASWC to participate. So just make sure you're part of that, so you can get the latest information. And enjoy Ahsoka. Thank you for listening to the Smuggler's Galaxy podcast. If you could, please leave a like and a 5-star review of the show anywhere you listen to podcasts, if it's allowed. It really helps us out and points people to our show. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Send us an email or message us. We love feedback, and we love to make you part of the show. Our email address is smugglersgalaxy@gmail.com. Thank you to Levi Waterhouse for the Smuggler's Galaxy music. And thank you to Alfonso Riviera for the Smuggler's Galaxy logo. People, collect for the love of it. Hashtag vote with your wallet. Sabine will be on tonight. Pass on what you've learned. Be a positive force in the collecting community. This is the way.
Back the ghost. This is the way.